date the minister, because it means that we will never have the minister with us, because really she is attending the other committee. Yeah, I wonder if anything can be done to accommodate her.
Okay, I think honorable members, we can take that. We accept the apologies with the reasons that have put before. However, in respect of our acting minister, members, when we are dealing with a specific issue that we think that it needs the acting minister direction other than the DM, will indicate in such and notify the minister in time so that she can avail herself. But the DM is here, as normally previously has happened, that if the minister is not here, the DM do then tend to represent the department. But I take your point. We shall pronounce that we need her on certain matters, and she will then get, she can see how she juggles around between the two portfolios, as it were. It's a valid point. Thank you very much, Honorable Dole. With that, honorable members, may we move to that, to the business of the day. That since 2016, StatsSA has experienced budget cuts from the National Treasury, which had negatively impacted on their budget compensation of employees, and certain series being discontinued, such as poverty survey. Members will recall that. Secondly, that our committee has previously written to several letters to the minister in the presidency for DPME. May his soul rest in peace. As well as the Minister of Finance and the Mencom Budget Office requesting the National Treasury to review its decision on continuous cutting of budget of SSA, as it were. We will recall, honorable members, that at one stage, SSA did give us an account that they did receive the money. However, moving forward, they didn't deal address the shortfall, which was more often an emergency one, which didn't stretch very far. We are saying then, honorable members, which we are still going to engage with, budget cuts impact on the core business of the departments, and it's worrisome. Hence, this meeting that both ministries, we believe they must be here, or departments. The committee had decided then, I'm referring this also for the treasurer's attention, so that any delegation from treasury can also take note of this, that we have invited National Treasury as well as SSA to understand the rationale and the impact of the budget cuts which hamper the department, which is SSA operations. With those words, honorable members, let me allow the Deputy Minister of DPME, SSA, and Statistician General to take us through. Then they will be followed by National Treasury representatives. But I must say that we are not making anyone to point fingers at each other, but to say how do we collectively navigate to ensure that the core, more insightful stats that advise the government, the whole government, even local government and provincial government, in terms of doing their plans, that are informed by stats-based, evidence-based, as it were, because figures, all of us will agree, they don't lie. Then hence, we are not saying that SSA is important than the service delivery, but that's the basis and the foundation which also informs the plans of the government and allocation of budgets, which is more scientific driven, as it were. With those few words, honorable members, once more, we are all welcome, and I'll hand over to the DM. So, over to you, ma'am, and your director, who's going to speak, followed by SSA. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you. Let me start by greeting you, Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee, but also to greet my colleagues from StatsSA and other members who are here. Let's just maybe, before I go into the jinx of the matter, speak in relation to the unavailability of the minister, and just to register that we really, really apologize. And I'm glad that you are aware that she's also leading a department of small business, and therefore from time to time she might not be able to come here. But safe to say that before we come to the portfolio committee, we do have engagements with her so that we can prepare ourselves and come and speak with you. And we really apologize, and hopefully one day she will be able to come if she will not be having other commitments, but we remain committed to ensuring that we bring the necessary answers to you. Chairperson of the committee, the person who's going to take us through, I think is the SG, Mr. Maluleke. So I'm just going to, let me just flag out a few issues which we will touch on. May the minister, Minister Jesse Mutembu, soul rest in peace. You'll remember that following some conversation which the late had with the SG and the States Council, various stakeholders were engaged, and then and in the 2020-2021 financial year, we ended up receiving a 45 million, which at the end, after we received it, then took us to totaling of 154.4 million over the 2020 MTFF period. He will expand more on that. You will also remember that because of the invisible virus which we found ourselves in, the COVID-19, it also meant that they had to halt the process of filling critical vacant posts. You will expand that in relation to that, what then happened as we go along. What we are hoping for is that we remain afloat as SA. We are doing our work amidst the pandemic. You will expand more in relation to the most innovative ways which they've had to bring on board to ensure that the institution is able to function amidst the problems that we find. Indeed, Chair, like when you were doing your opening remarks, indeed, we will also go into the accountability of the resources which we were given to and what is it that we're able to do. The other thing which we successfully concluded was the approval of a new structure, which we did in March 2020. He will also venture into that, but it came therefore into effect on the 1st of April 2020. SG, if you can also just touch on that so that we can give confidence to the committee that amidst the challenges that we have, we are able to do our work. Over to you, SG. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Over to you, Dr.
Thank you, Chair. I want to say that I aspire to be chairperson, to be a doctor, but that title will come later when I have acquired my PhD. I have asked Celia to upload our presentation if it can be uploaded from that site. Just if you give me a second and we upload it, and then we can start moving.
You may start writing your what do we call it in university language before you become a doctor. Your thesis. You can start writing your thesis meanwhile.
Thank you indeed, Chairperson. What we are presenting before the committee today is a matter that ourselves and our colleagues at the National Treasury are aware of. We have also shared this presentation with them before today, because we don't see this meeting as a venue for contestation, but for deliberations about how we resolve this problem. So that's why we have been communicating with our colleagues at National Treasury. So we will look at the issues of historic reductions. We will look at 2021 budget reductions. We will look at the MTF 2021 budget reductions, and indeed the impact on the budget reductions. And we have certainly taken the brief that we got from the committee that we focus on issues of budgets other than other issues that we're dealing with in the organization. For starters, Chair, let us talk about the role of data and statistics during times of crisis. And I want to start from the current challenge that we are having of COVID-19, which happens to be a health issue. But in long term, we have to look at other issues such as gender-based violence, governance, unemployment, inequality, poverty, and other issues that can have long-term economic consequences. So where we are now in this time of crisis, the whole space is that there's been a lot of demand for data. some of which we do not have, and policy response can be constrained as regards lack of data. So the National Statistics System Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues is a backbone for informed and robust policy responses to a crisis. But when things are normal, it is a backbone. Now let us get straight to the point of historic challenges or budget reductions. While we have taken from 2017-2018, let me mention, Chair, that the challenges of status quo start prior to that, in the fact that at some stage, as the leadership of the organization, we had taken a decision around 2015 that we will not be filling vacant positions at the time. We would rather use the money that we were allocated for the income and expenditure survey that helps us to understand matters of poverty in the country. Because if we didn't run that income and expenditure survey and the living conditions survey, we would not be in a position to talk about the 2015 that we are talking about as a reference point for poverty. And it's because at the time we didn't have funding for the poverty survey, so we decided to fund it. And on the basis of that, when then we were outside the poverty survey and we wanted to deal with issues of recruitment, we no longer had the funds to do so, because our compensation of employees budget was reduced. And we are not talking about hiring new people. We are talking about reductions on warm bodies, that is people who are there. Now, in 2017-2018, we had an authorized expenditure on compensation of employees of 57 million. 2018-2019, we had an unauthorized expenditure of 49 million. And 2019-20, it was sitting at 51 million, which cumulative is putting us at about 157 million. So if we have further cuts on the on the compensation of employees, certainly we will have serious problems, because we'll have to stop some products and we'll have poor quality. So when there is poor quality, we can't make the data available. The statistician general has a responsibility to produce quality data to the public. If it's poor quality, we will not make it available. Certainly, in the 2020-2021, we had allocations for the IES income and expenditure from National Treasury, but we had indicated that it is not sufficient. Now, there were two options that we could go about. One is that we would rather split the work of the income and expenditure, which is the poverty survey, over 2 years, with the hope that we would get money in the second year, but that money was not guaranteed. This 150 million would be the tranche that we would get for the survey, which would mean that we would have to break series if we introduce new methods of collection without testing. So what happens in official statistics is that, except in the census, which is large scale, where we have to have iterations and iterations, in sample surveys, because of the size of samples, if you change methods and you break series, it's then unforgivable sin for any statistician in official practice, not only in your country, but all over the world, and where we account internationally or we have to report internationally. Now, breaking series will mean that, one, all the data we have collected in the past has lost relevance, and future data will not connect to previous data, meaning that future generations will not be able to work backwards for purposes of proper research, but also for policy implications. It's got serious policy implications. So we did surrender that when we engaged with National Treasury that they needed funds as of June 2020. We surrendered that 150 million. We surrendered 50 million for goods and services. And of course, we are saying that if we
were to observe any further cuts, which is a point I'll come back to, we will have serious implications. But another 120 million, 120.6 million reductions on compensation of employees has been raised in the AENE. And going further, let us look at the 2021 MTF budget reductions. When we adopted the new structure in April 2020, one of the things that we have been engaging our colleagues at DPSA and National Treasury, did raise an issue that we are not able to sustain the ballooning budget of compensation of employees in the state, in government. So one of the things that we did was to abolish 198 positions from our original structure, or the structure we had at the time, which actually meant that we had 3,313 approved positions in the establishment. But then what we have been alerted to is that in the 2021-2022 budget cuts amount to 226 million rands in the next financial year, 2022-23, or in the one that will kick in next year, we will see 303 million rands cut and 237 in the outer year of the MTF, that is 2023-2024. So what will happen is that we'll have unauthorized expenditure on compensation of employees occurring over the MTF period, because before we even talk about new positions we want to fill, we already have warm bodies in the organization that the organization cannot sustain. Now, another issue is that compensation of employees without tools of trade, that is goods and services, for purposes of deploying the staff members to do meaningful work, doesn't assist us. As we are sitting now, we are losing a lot of staff members, about 24 to 26 staff members every quarter. At least these numbers slowed down during the COVID environment. I guess those who usually hunt in the specific grounds were not hunting. But the challenge is that we are not losing your lowest of the your performance or your lowest of people with expertise. We are losing the top of the crop. And what is happening is that some of these people, we have built skills over two decades. So when you lose a person who deals with your national accounts, or you lose someone who deals with your poverty studies, rebuilding that capacity takes another 10 years to actually bring them to where they were. We used to have an opportunity of bringing in staff members instead of saying the form of interns. Now, interns were a ground through which we could replace over time in our lower echelons, so that over time we could have people with expertise. But because we don't have money, we no longer have that. So when a person leaves, let us say, with their 10 years, 20 years expertise, it means some of the series that they were responsible for remain at risk. And we are not losing them to just some corner cafe was that establishment. We are losing them to big agencies like your World Bank, your IMF, your Statistics Australia, your Statistics Canada, and the like. And these are agencies that were amongst the same league in international statistical establishment. So when they get someone from Statistics, say they know they've gotten among the best in the world. Now, what are the impacts? What is the impact, especially on economic statistics? The periodic non-financial census of municipalities is at risk. And one of the things that we are facing in other surveys is that we are facing loss of detail at the level of industry, variable, and geography. And less frequency. Actually, what we are also considering is that if we do not have sufficient funding, we might have to start not making the CPI monthly, manufacturing monthly, retail trade, wholesale trade, and others. And if we don't have them monthly, what it means is that for those who rely on this information for purposes of planning, they can no longer have a reliable data for planning. And it's because it's not as easy as saying that once you have cut a budget or you have cut your cloth according to the size of a budget you have, you can easily go and just tweak off some of the sizes of the samples. We need samples that are reliable for purposes of reporting nationally, and in some cases provincially, and in some cases, especially in social statistics, even below the level of a province. So the biggest challenge is that our measurement of economy, the GDP, will not be accurate. We will have challenges. We will produce it as long as we still can vouch for quality. But at the point where we don't have quality, we won't make it available. We are the first ones to say, no, we can't make it available. We will receive advice from council. And of course, we have challenges that will affect negatively the monetary policy, fiscal policy, sectoral policies, micro policies, and of course, our reporting on the NDP and SDGs and the district development model will be impacted, no doubt about that. Let us look at population and social statistics. The domestic tourism survey is already being discontinued. And the challenge here is that when you look at the tourism satellite account, which relies on the domestic tourism survey and a host of others, it will lose another link and another leg that is dependent for about 40. That has serious implications. Our general household survey will lose detail, accuracy, and frequency. We do the general household survey once every year. The quarter labor force survey, the governance, peace, security, and justice survey will be impacted as well. Now, with the quarterly labor force survey, we should remember there's a history. Prior to 2008, we used to do this twice a year. Now, it was losing the frequency, and it was not informing markets, particularly labor markets, but also economic policy. It was not informing policy sufficiently in terms of response. And it was decided that we must do it quarterly in line with other nations of the world. But it's one of the areas where we are running. We have run parallel surveys for transition to data collected on digitalization. But if we can't sustain the frequency, then we are back to that period of just twice a year. And in some cases, there are nations on the continent that produce this once a year, but it's already irrelevant by the time it comes out. Mortality and more delay, that the 2018 report is not out. The 2019 report is not out. The 2020 report, we expect it by next year because it usually takes us a year to get all this information. But the fact that we have already 2 years that are not out there in terms of informing South Africans what is taking their lives, especially in this environment of COVID-19, there will be more questions about what has taken the lives of South Africans. There have already been debates about excess deaths on monthly basis and the like. And status A hasn't been on an informed basis, except looking at our historic data for comments. And that has serious implications. So the negative impact on the DORA, social policy, and NDP, SDG reporting, underestimating crime and victims of victim perspectives on the, and gender-based based in and was that violence, employment and unemployment insights, district development model. This one will be impacted, no doubt, because we will not be able to have samples that will respond to the DDM. And if our samples are not designed for purposes of response and they are also small, then we cannot report on this. So it's a policy position through which the country wants to work, but state to say we will not be in a position to do that. Tourism demand on the side of what satellite accounts, I've already spoken about this one. We were in a meeting yesterday with the Department of Tourism, and they are already lamenting this issue because it's going to hit them hard when we cannot be able to give them the data they need. Impacts of budget cuts in terms of statistical infrastructure. The unitary fees for our head office will be unaffordable. So it means that, and these are contractual commitments that have occurred, have been negotiated over a period of time. the provincial and district offices will not be affordable. And it might not look like we need them. But one thing we should remember is that the footprint of statistics initially was not there at provincial and district levels in South Africa. It's only 1996 to 99, following the 1996 census, that we saw a serious and a major risk of having temporary offices, especially when it comes to accountability. Because when you have temporary offices and temporary staff, the day you pay them, they work from home, the papers are at home, every document they work on, they don't know where it is. But it's not only that. It's because for our collections where movements require staff members to move from place to place, we had staff members traveling long distances. In the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape, we were losing staff members. We were losing lives. There was one time that in the Eastern Cape, we lost 4 staff members in a day. And the following 2 days later, we lost the lives of 2 staff members. It's the same as in the Northern Cape because of the long distances our staff members had to travel. But not only that, the response to municipalities and their demand for data works well when they have the nearest office through which they can engage, let's say, and we can understand their data needs, but also improve on the administrative records that they are having. Statistical frames certainly will not be maintained, and we are already facing a challenge now. Geographic information was the frame, which is the backbone for all household surveys. The business register, which is the backbone for all economic surveys, economic statistics, becomes very critical. The cut down of on our ICT infrastructure and services will mean that all these challenges will mean that the quality of economic and social statistics, population and social statistics will be compromised. We will no longer be able to invest in the technology in the future. And the bigger in technology, our budgets will remain high. But for sample surveys, before we invest on technology, we must do parallel runs for purposes of the quality of statistics. So the impact of the budget cuts, as we'll see in the next slide, will mean that we will have no data. We will have, in some cases, we'll have no data. We will have delays in data that must be available, and we'll have poor quality data. And of course, this will lead to a loss of trust in official statistics as a result of the fragmented and poorly fitted policy. Fragmented and poorly policy responses will actually push challenges to our country. Now, let us look at what we have asked for as additional funding. In the establishment of 3,313 approved positions, we have 601 posts that are actually vacant, which lead to 18.1% vacancy rate. This would even be higher if we didn't adopt a new structure for which we had to abolish some positions. We have identified 135 critical posts. And in these ones, we have, of course, in the process been engaging with National Treasury when we established them. We had a higher number, but we kept on whittling them down. We started with about 350. We went to about 202, and we went down to 135. Critical posts, which we have started filling. Now, our biggest challenge is that when you start filling these positions, you have also internal staff members who apply. And some of these people have been acting in this position since 2016, 2017. And some of them happen to do well. So what happens is in the iterations you hire, when they leave the position they are occupying, they actually create a vacancy again. So we have to go through iterations, and this is very critical because sometimes I wish we could just say we want to bring people from outside and fill all these positions, but labor laws don't allow that. But also, you can't advertise and not give your staff members a chance to compete. Whether they succeed or not, it's something else, especially when they have held fought for about 5 years in support of the organization and they have chosen not to leave. And it's not like there are not other opportunities out there. So in the 2021-2022 2022, we have asked for additional 90 million, 2022, 2023, 97 million, and in the outer year, 146 million. And this is largely to cover the estimated cost of warm bodies that we are having, and the issue of filling the critical positions and actually addressing the vacancies. But of course, in the 2021-2022, the cost of employees is estimated to be an over expenditure of 30 million on the existing warm bodies. So we are not talking about those that are outside, that those that we are willing to appoint. So as of 1st April, when the new budget kicks in, we will already be on an over expenditure on warm bodies. Now, what does it mean? Impact on the new structure. The new structure was approved on in March 2020, and of course it kicked in April 2020. And internal placements for chief directors and directors have been concluded, because you have in the abolition of positions as of post, as well as we abolished certain functions. It means certain functions had to be lumped together. In some areas, we have had to have new emphasis, especially in the light of the technology we are headed into. So what we have done is that we have to fit and allocate in terms of placement, chief directors and directors. And the recruitment processes have started. Those of DDGs have not been concluded. As you know, that honorable members will remember, and indeed colleagues, that at DDG level, we have almost everyone acting. We have about four DDGs that are in acting capacity. This process has already started. It started with the late Minister Mtembu, and then, of course, it's continuing with our current acting minister. But let me indicate that we continue to engage National Treasury. What we do is that every corner, everywhere we go, we have to continue in discussions. Whether we get money or not is something else, but engagements must be ongoing. I must admit, Chairperson, that the next slide says the Helakwan, meaning that I finish here. And it has a history in that when I was young in the village, our mothers could not read and write. And because they couldn't read and write, our fathers who were in the cities, Joburg, Cape Town, everywhere, and our mothers had to communicate. And we were scribes for our mothers, as we were among the first batch or generation to be literate. So our mothers could not finish a letter to their husbands that they miss them or love them. So are our fathers when they write back. The standard conclusion was that I finish yet all the issues. The issue was that we should never again allow a situation where members of our society, our citizenry, or any other person cannot express themselves because we could not plan better and because we didn't have the data to do so. Chairperson, as I conclude, we have, as you have indicated, we wanted the chair of the Statistics Council to join us. He's here with us. But the agreement was that I should start and present, and once I'm done, he will come after me. The State Council is not a council for statistics. It is an independent body of members of society from the academia, business, government, labor organizations, and the like, and members of the general public who advise the statistician general and the minister responsible for statistics. They completely remain independent, and their main responsibility is to safeguard official statistics, while the statistician general is responsible for official and other statistics. Once it's graduated, other statistics are graduated into official, and then council takes charge and has particular interest on that. Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues, the next slide looks like blank. And if you allow me, I'll hand over to the chair of the Statistics Council, Professor David Tembrey.
Thank you very much, SG. And over to you, Chairperson. Prof.
Thank you very much.
1 minute, Prof.
Okay.
Just before I forget, Honorable Gondwe has apologized. Also, she's got similar problem with Comrade Honorable Ntuli with the load shedding. She might be in and out, but I'm just registering it for record purposes so that you don't think that she has left the meeting. She will rejoin at any given time when there's a similar match. Stay out. Over to you, Prof. My apology for that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Absolutely no need to apologize. Colleagues, forgive me, I'm just an academic. All protocol observed, I don't quite know how to address all these gatherings. I'm not putting on my camera just to try and save bandwidth in these constricted days. Can I say that as a chair of council, what you just heard is, as that film is called, the sum of all our fears, and that is an agency that is the leading stats agency, certainly in Africa and in most parts of the global south, steadily being throttled purely on the basis of no money. And what we are watching as the Stats Council with increasing anxiety is the growing chasm between what we need and what we're being, what we're able, what Stats is able to give us. So I've been on the council, I was here under my brother Ben Mkhakhlele, who was chair before me. We've been having budget cuts for many, many years, as the SG said. Not just, they're certainly not COVID-related. They go back at least 2015, 2016. And the reason for it, we cannot understand, because at that point there was, that is not a COVID moment when the budget, where the economy had tanked. And yet we have been hit with both freezes on hiring and promoting people and cuts in finance on a consistent basis. And the result of that is that, as the SG has said, the samples are getting smaller, the data are becoming more unreliable. Government seems to want to move in the direction correctly of more and more granular data at district level, but it's cutting off the legs of Stats to be able to provide the data to tell us what our district looks like. And so we're going to have this wonderful model that I agree with on district-level planning and implementing, but we won't actually know what that district looks like. And worse than that, if Stats SA can't provide it, the governments, local and provincial, will end up commissioning private sector entities to go out and do the state's job for it at a vastly inflated cost. So there's no, it's a kind of false sense of saving if we think it's saving money. We haven't run the poverty survey. You know, in our country at this moment, to not run the poverty survey is frankly criminal. And the same is true of the income and expenditure survey. How can we know who is poor? Who is the poorest of the poor? Who are they? Where are they? We all think we know, but you need accurate statistical data to actually know, so that you can invest government's resources in certain places that are needed. But when the big investment agencies and the ratings agencies and the big corporates come in, they want to know, where are the places of promise, of potential? Where should we invest? Again, if you don't have accurate data, they will simply walk away and go to someone who can tell them where there is a return on their investment. And so we're deeply worried that Stats SA continues to innovate. So in the period of COVID, you saw it switch. It pivoted very quickly to an online posture. Smaller samples, but it kept the economic stats going. It kept the CPI going, kept all of those going. And you could see academics in the private sector beginning to circle around, but Stats SA kept itself going through that. And now we're facing the census. And I think your colleagues at Treasury often look at the big budget for census as if that's, which is a big budget, it's $3 billion, as if that's some kind of solution. The budget for census pays for doing the census. It doesn't pay for anything else. So it won't help us to do a census and still have no one there to analyze it and tell us what the census means. And if the complaint is that we are slow in spending on that money, the answer is not that we are slow. The answer is that as good statisticians, you don't waste money. So we would not try and do a census when we are facing the prospect of wave three, where we as council have engaged strongly with the SG to say, run the pilot in the worst circumstances, which we assume will be June, July, possibly August this year, when we are all expecting a third wave. And that still allows us to run the census this financial year, but not in the middle of the worst possible moment. So we are staggering the spending in order to make sure we do the best possible census for South Africa. But our profound worry, and I'll end on this point, is that the state, by which I mean the whole machinery of government, is moving correctly into this more granular, more hands-on, more district, more localized, you know, for which spatial geography, statistical geography, and so on is utterly a prerequisite. And at the same time, we are being cut and cut and cut and cut, so that we've got a 1 in 5 people doesn't exist. You know, when you've got a 20% vacancy rate, you're in real trouble. And most of those, as the SG said, are highly specialized people, most of whom have gone into extremely good jobs elsewhere, so good for them. But we don't attract the youngsters. You know, the people that I teach at the university don't want to go to Stats SA, where they would normally go and learn about policy and politics and the NDP and how do stats relate to that. Stats SA is no longer an attractive destination for those smart young graduates, but the private sector is, as we've heard, the World Bank is. And I just feel that we're focusing on rand value, and we're not focusing on statistical value. And after COVID, what this country will most desperately need is an honest, frank assessment of what we look like. And that's not just a census that has happened. It's a census that has happened and been verified by the international consultants we're bringing in, and has been analyzed accurately and in terms of what you as politicians need to make your decisions about how to, who to give grants to, where to invest, where to do this and that. If we focus on the statistical value add that we can do, that is where the conversation should be. And my very final point is, I hope you notice that there's a chasm between the rather modest ask that Stats SA is put up in that second last slide, kind of 90 million, 50 million, and the swinging cuts that are coming our way in the MTEF cycle, which, as the SG says, from the first day of the next financial year, we're already at fault because we're going to be spending on employees that are not in the budget. So we're being put in an absolutely impossible situation. And it's unfortunate because the role of the Stats Council is to verify stats. And if you keep throttling Stats SA, the day will come when we say that cannot be released. And the day that we have to say to the SG, you may not release that statistic, we are going to be in real trouble with our clients who we report to, be they the UN, be it the OECD, all sorts of people that we have to report to. That day is coming very, very close. I attended your meeting, I think, a year and a half ago, and we begged and pleaded then. And now this is the last step. You know, if we don't turn this around soon, I'm desperately worried that the day is going to come when, as chair of council, I have to say we cannot put our name to that. At that point, we stop having an official statistic. The SG can still release it. He's independent. But if he releases it without our approval, it's a fundamental shock of faith in the institution, which we are doing everything we can to avoid. And I really enjoin all members to please. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. Everett. Thank you very much. I must just confirm on behalf of the collective of this portfolio committee that we are on the same hymn book, same verse, same interpretation of the role and the importance of Stats SA as it were. So hence, even this term also, we have agreed that we must have this discussion at this level today. That will bring me to Chair Massey. Do we have anyone from Treasury? I don't want just to call them when I'm not too sure whether they are with us or not.
Can you repeat that?
Notwithstanding the apologies that we have received.
Can you just repeat that, sir? You have cut the...
Okay, I was saying that from you, can you advise me whether do we have any representative from Treasury, notwithstanding the 3 apologies that we have received?
Yes, sir, we do have a representative from National Treasury.
By the name of?
Mr. Mokgatla is here, sir.
Mr. Mokgatla, you are most welcome, sir. Thank you very much for attending our meeting and also responding positively to our call. It's a long-standing issue, and I'm sure that you just zoom to the actual issue and also advise us of this portfolio committee, what do we think we must do, because we think we have exhausted everything. And even in our last previous years, recommendations on the quarterly reports and the annual reports, we have stated that It will be unfortunate if we don't pay attention as a country in terms of also financing status areas as well. Over to you, sir. Thank you very much for attending.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to the committee members. This is Mampo Modisa from the National Treasury. I am the head of public finance. I will be with my team, Ms. Tigian and Ms. Mohamedla. So we will be doing the presentation for you. I'm just going to switch off. I'm just going to share the presentation, Chairperson, if you don't mind.
Apology for calling you, Miss. Over to you, ma'am.
It's okay. Yeah. We've had one
thing. Yeah, my
Can the chair see me? I'm just going to bring my presentation. Can you see the presentation?
Yes, ma'am. It's very clear. Thank you very much. You may proceed.
Thank you. So, Chairperson and committee members, what we were asked to do was basically to look at the budget for SSA and help the committee come up with proposals on how to deal with the funding pressures for SSA. I think the first thing that I would like to say, Chairperson and committee members, is that we are aware of the consequences of these budget reductions on all the budgets. So basically what I'm going to try and do as a background information is just to help the committee so that there is a bit of an understanding on how we do the budget process. So basically what we do is that we have different role players in terms of the budget process. So as you would be aware, we have the legislature where mainly the committees that look at the budget process will be the spending and the select committees on appropriations and finance. But we also have the political led to our budget process where we have cabinet, extended cabinet, and what we call the minister's committee on the budget. There's also the technical team that looks at these numbers, and what we have there, Chairperson, is that we have departments and public entities where we have these discussions, and then this is presented, of course, to cabinet, but we also have intergovernmental settings as well, where we make sure that the budget is between all the spheres of government. This looks like a complicated slide, but basically what it says, Chairperson, is that Treasury and other departments, we will have bilateral meetings, which is the blue blocks at the bottom, and then all of this go up to extended cabinet and cabinet. So basically, Chairperson, when we present the budget review, we present a budget review that has been endorsed and approved by cabinet. So all the budget reductions and all the proposals that we have in the budget will be approved by cabinet. There are times where cabinet will send us back as technocrats, will send us back as National Treasury to go and relook at some of the proposals that we have. So basically, Chairperson, what makes this process a bit complicated is adding the layer where we look at who finally approves the budget. Now, according to the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, basically the Minister of Finance will table the budget, and then 16 days the National Assembly or the Committee on Finance will have to submit a report. Now, our framework, where basically is the overview of the revenue that we think we're going to collect, the expenditure that we think we can afford as the country, and then the debt that we need to raise. If they approve that, then the second step would be the division of revenue bill, where the expenditure that we think we can afford gets distributed according to the three spheres of government. Now, the most important committee for this purpose, especially looking at the matter at hand that we're discussing today, would be the appropriations committee, the standing committee on appropriations, and the select committee on appropriations. So basically, Chairperson, these two committees have the powers to reverse any budget reductions or any allocations made between one vote to another vote. So they have the powers to move funding, for example, from Treasury to SSA. They have the powers to move funding from Home Affairs to basic education. So they can move the allocation. However, what it means is that they can only move the allocation within this vote, but the bottom line has to stay the same. So those would be the committees, Chairperson, that I think are quite important. Just in the Bureau of Summary, Chair, and committee members, is that what has been, what we have seen in terms of the overall picture is that our revenue collapsed as a country because of COVID. So basically, we have spending that we cannot afford. Now, what one has to consider is, do we continue with spending that we can't afford as a country and risk a fiscal cliff where we have no choice but to implement radical steps in trying to reverse this? Or do we as a government, while we still have the powers and the leeway, do we correct the risk that we see? And with this budget, Chairperson and committee members, is that Cabinet took a decision that we will be correcting the situation where debt is not stabilizing, a situation where we pay so much for interest costs, and the situation where we risk having other institutions come in and help us deal with our budgets. When we were presenting these to Cabinet, and when I go back to the Standing Committee on Appropriations, the consequences of these and budget reductions are very clear and they were presented. However, Cabinet had to weigh the immediate risk that we see and try to remedy the situation so that in the future we can see better numbers vis-a-vis taking the risk. So I think what we was presented in the budget is basically a balance between trying to make sure we are sustainable as the country vis-a-vis the implications of this budget reductions. So, Chairperson, I'm just going to ask my team member, Gillian Wilson, to take us through two specific numbers for SSA and what we try to do in order to identify areas where SSA can improve spending or where there's some spending efficiencies, so that we can deal with the funding pressure. But what I wanted to say is that the budget reductions that SSA is facing, they are not the only ones. I hope you have heard in the media, Chairperson, where Treasury and government has been criticized severely for increasing social grants by way less than inflation. And that also is one of the consequences of the budget reductions. But as the minister explained, it's better to fix your business now than to get someone else from the outside to fix your business. Gillian, please continue. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, ma'am. Over to you. Thank you very much, Ms. Modise. So over to you, ma'am.
Morning, portfolio committee members, Chairperson, and also SG. Thank you for the opportunity to present. Mampu, can you just put us on the next slide, please?
Okay. Meanwhile, before you proceed, ma'am, if I can ask all of us for 1 minute while we're looking at the slides, just to put our video on for our record purposes. Our communication department has just asked us to do that so that they can also attach the names and the faces to all of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. My video is on.
Okay.
So while I'm presenting, I will leave my video on.
Okay, thank you very much.
With this first slide that I'm presenting, we just wanted to give the committee a view of the allocation to StatsSA over the 2021 MPF period. And as you can see, we want to indicate to the members that your main cost drivers in the budget of Stats is your compensation of employees. That is more than 50% of the total budget. Also, your goods and services also make out a large percentage of the budget. So over the MTF, 89% of the budget goes to your current payments, which is your compensation of employees and your goods and services budget. I also want to indicate with this slide that there is first is I don't have a straight line budget where you have a baseline and it increases with a certain percentage every year. As you can see, the budget for 2021-22 is much larger than the 22-23 and the 23-24 budget. That is because in 21-22 we have allocated funding for the census. And we do allocate funding for the census three years before the census actually are implemented. So without emphasizing on the census budget, I just want to indicate that your census budget also need to come from a pool of funds, and that is not always available, have an impact on the expenditure ceiling of the Treasury. So this is a global view of the budget of TESA going forward. Next slide, Mampo. Can we get the next slide? Okay, so with this slide, we want to indicate that in 2017, as the SGM indicated in his presentation, we have implemented expenditure ceilings for for compensation of employees. That was implemented in 2017. So if you look at the spending of StatsSA prior to 2017, it was underspending in your compensation budget, and every year funding was moved from your compensation budget to your goods and services to pay for your temporary field workers that are serving. And because at that point when we established the ceilings, we focused mainly on your underspending programs, and there was underspending in your COE budget of StatsSA. From 2015 to 2017, there was a few major departments to formulate a mitigating strategy for your personnel costs. Department will also focus on early retirement and other strategies that can reduce your spending on your compensation budget. StatsSA was not very successful in terms of implementing the strategies, and that led to overspending of your COE budget. And as you have seen in the StatsSA budget, there was overspending in 2017, 18, 18, 19, and 19, 20 with those amounts, 57, 50, also underspending 19 and 20. Next slide, Mampo. So this is just a global picture of the this adjustment. So we are focused from 2016-17 until your latest NTF 2021 MTF. As you can see that there was budget reductions made every MTF, but there was also additions to the budget. And the red figures indicate where there is adjustment that was positive in terms of allocating more funding to the budget. We do realize that certain of the surveys is not allocated in the baseline. We need to look at funding for those activities on an annual basis. I think the problem area that was also indicated in the stats presentation is the cuts that we've made, the 2021 NTF, those large cuts right at the end of the presentation. I think to explain those cuts is that there was a combination between cost of living adjustments that was removed from the baseline, and also the reduction approved by cabinet at the time, and that is why the cuts were fairly large in the 2021 NTF. reply? Okay, so this is basically explaining the previous slide where there was additions to the budget. Allocated 105 million for the continuous population survey in 2020. We've allocated money for deal with your compensation pressures, where we wanted the department to deal with filling the critical post. Money was allocated for the poverty service. Also then in 2021, funding was allocated for the census of 2021. We also realized that with COVID-19, there was certain surveys that couldn't happen. And also the last pilot for Census 21 was also moved from the from 2020 to 2021. We've done a funding model review with the department, and at the time, and that was done in 2019, at the time we took a snapshot of all the surveys that is executed by SACSA, and this is surveys that's not done on a regular basis. I think it changed with the year. With COVID, there was also additional surveys. We wanted to establish which surveys are covered in the baseline and which are not. Next slide. So with the exercise, there was 5 surveys that was not funded in the baseline, which is your... Let me go back to the previous slide. Okay, so there was 5 surveys that we picked up that was not covered in the baseline, which is your living conditions, income, expenditure, general household, your census, and your last community service, that we focused on to provide additional funding. Our recommendation was mainly to look at, to appoint temporary field workers rather than your permanent field workers. Our recommendation was also to smooth out expenditure of your irregular surveys, and rather than executed over 1 year, executed over 2 years and longer. The other recommendation.
Ms. Wolfson, yes. One second. At this level, I hope I also cover the thinking and the minds of the portfolio committee members of this committee, that we are not necessarily want to venture into the details of the operations and the line items of the department, which is SACSA. But what we would have loved to hear from you, I thought that Ms. Modise was going towards that direction. I thought we're going to pick up from that, because the other parts of your input talks to the back office engagement and also the facts as it were. Otherwise then, which means we'll engage on the line items, which was, I don't think we'll finish today. But probably if what we want to know is that we acknowledge the challenges, what is standing 1, 2, 3, but we are also mindful that probably, I'm just borrowing the words that are not accurate for me to say them, but I'm saying that probably we might also look at 1, 2, 3 based on what Ms. Modise said in slide 5, which for me is very critical. So I'm saying for me, if you can start going closer home, because we want the tomorrow, not the yesterday. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, so I think with the funding model review, we identified certain shortfalls in the budget. We allocated funding, but that was also counted with the expenditure reductions. With the review of the funding model, it is something that's not a once-off exercise. We are engaging with the department on a continuous basis to look at the shortfall in the budget, especially with relation to the cuts over the MTF. With the next slide, we want to quickly go through the expenditure review that we've done and also the recommendations, and Mohatla Tima will focus on that.
Thank you, ma'am. And I thought that I need just to direct the presentation because we've got different outputs for this purpose of today's meeting. Over to you, ma'am. Then you give us the most awaiting, hopeful presentation. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairperson and committee members. My name is Mohatla Tima, and I work with Gillian and Mampo, as Mampo had already indicated. So in the 2020 year, financial year, in recognition of the budget pressures that states has, we decided to conduct a spending review in order for us to test if there are any potential savings that we can identify within the budget baseline of stats, which they can then reprioritize to other areas where they are experiencing budget pressures. So our main focus was on the department spending on provincial and district offices. And the reason why we decided to focus on that was because the provincial and district offices are cost drivers in the department. So when we conducted this spending review, we worked together with the GTEC, and in that we have found that personnel expenditure, as the SG had already alluded to and Gillian has already alluded to, is the largest spending cost driver. But in the specifically in the district and provincial offices, spending on compensation of employees is driven by survey officers or field workers and survey coordinators and the management. We've also found that spending is mainly driven by population size in different provinces, where provinces like the Northern Cape and Free State, which have the lowest population size, have the lowest spending, and KZN and Gauteng would show a higher spending. There's generally a higher cost per employee in smaller provinces, and that is mainly due to smaller provinces having posts at higher level when compared to your lower level post. And it seems from where we are sitting, it seems the reason why there is higher a higher level of positions at higher levels in smaller provinces in relation to the lower levels is because the department seems to have the same number of middle managers and senior managers in smaller provinces as the provinces that are actually bigger. Next slide, Mampo. So the chart that you see here just demonstrates the percentage of field workers of posts per category. And like I said before, the field workers account for a larger percentage of the personnel expenditure, followed by survey coordinators and by management. So it's basically a show of the composition of spending per category. Move to the next slide. It basically demonstrates the same kind of information. Can we go to the next slide? The second largest spending area in the provinces is office accommodation. And when we looked at how much the department spends per province on office accommodation, we noticed that it differs significantly from the guideline that we retrieved from Public Works, where it is stated that the average cost per square meter for an employee should be 12 square meters. But when we looked at the size of the accommodation that the department occupies, there were significant variations. And that is one of the areas that we thought maybe if we really look into it, there may be potential savings that we can generate from that, and that can be reprioritized within the department. The next slide, please. The next slide. It's still related to office accommodation, so I would like to request that you move to the next slide. And the next item that we looked at was vehicle use, and when we looked at the number of field workers that the department has versus the number of vehicles that it uses, we saw that there's sort of an inconsistency in terms of the ratio of field workers per vehicle, and that is one of the areas that we are recommending that we should also look into to see whether there are no potential savings that can be derived from the use of vehicles if the department was to, the ratio of the use of the vehicles was to be 1:4. The next slide, please. Yes, these are the recommendations that we've made to the department in relation to personnel, office accommodation, and vehicle use. So we are noting that because of the kind of work that the department does, it may be important that it keeps the district offices that it has, but we are also advising the department to look at their cost at management level in those district offices to see that if whether it would be possible for some of the district to be, you have the same management at a district level, especially at smaller districts, so that there may be savings, but there's also an equitable division of work between districts that are smaller and districts that are bigger. But what is more important to note is, although we've conducted this review and we've produced this report from the review, the report has been submitted to the department, but what we have not done yet is to start engagements with the department to explore the practicality of some of the recommendations that we have made. What we are hoping for and what we have already begun to engage the department on is that we should sit and have a discussion on this in preparation for the 2022 MTF process. This is the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we do have a solution. Nevertheless, let me check my board here. That allows us as members to engage with the presentation. Both the StatsSA, as it were, starting from the high-level introductory made by DM, to the last speaker, which is Ms. Tama, which we highly appreciate as well. I can see Honorable Kibi, Malumane, Honorable Gondwe, Honorable Tuli, and Honorable Motsipe. And let's see. And Honorable Nobody, Ayeko Zotunagala, hopefully so. Over to you, ma'am, Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable members and colleagues. Honorable Chair, let me welcome and appreciate the presentations, the two presentations. My first one will go to States of South Africa. What strategies have been employed to ensure provincial and state district officers adhere to the government gazette on space planning norms and standards for office accommodation used by organs of state? And my next one also to states, are the provincial and district officers for StatsSA in charge of their own organizational structure and recruitment? And then my next and last one will be for the Treasury. In terms of slide 11, regarding funding review recommendation, National Treasury has recommended StatsSA to outsource field workers rather than appointing them permanently. My question therefore is, why should StatsSA outsource core business? Will this not increase state errors during data collection? And how will outsourcing reduce cost and improve efficiency for timers. The last one is, what about the permanent employees' morale of outsourcing their functions? I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable TB. That brings us to Honorable Malumane. Over to you, ma'am.
I think, Chairperson, you wanted to say Honorable Maluleke.
Oh, yes. My uncle, I don't know, you are good.
No, okay. But you are okay. Oh, because... Chairperson, my other question. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation by SASSA and National Treasury. I have one question because other questions have been asked by Comrade Kibi, my Honorable Kibi. My question will be based on the offices. I would like to find out from SASSA. Will SASSA, in consultation with the Department of Public Works, consider building its own offices in the provincial and district offices, like what the national offices have done, to reduce cost of renting buildings for office space? And also, I would like also to know from SASSA if there is any strategy to minimize costs and cut for hiring of vehicles and fleet services in current and future surveys, as well as census 2021, by implementing a ratio of 4 people in 1 car. How much is projected savings on vehicles and fleet service over the MTF? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Member. That brings us, Honorable Gombe, over to you, Doc.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lesoma. Greetings to all the honorable members and everyone on the virtual platform. Let me start by appreciating the important responsibility that SASSA has of publishing statistical reports, releases data and information that informs our socioeconomic planning and monitoring and decision making. They also contribute towards our policy formulation. And, you know, if we didn't have a report such as the Quarter Labor Force Survey and General Household Survey, I don't know how we would plan. And I take the concerns they've raised around the budget cuts that they've been, experiencing over the years. But I also want to encourage them to also, review some of, to view in a favorable light some of the recommendations made by Treasury around how they can, reduce some of their spending. Because when you're given money, there's a corresponding responsibility to ensure that that money is used in a very prudent way, and not in a way that, will compromise your operations. So my first question for SASSA around their office accommodation, I want to find out how much of their office accommodation is actually located in urban areas. Do they have any office accommodation in rural areas? Because it tends to be cheaper in rural areas as opposed to urban areas. And I take the point that the costs are higher in certain provinces such as the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and Western Cape. And I want to find out, have they looked into the possibility of constructing their own office accommodation as opposed to renting it out? And just pronounce on what, a question by another honorable member around the fact that why are they not complying with the norms and standards of the Department of Public Works? Because Treasury indicates that you would make a saving of 52 million per annum in terms of office accommodation spending if you complied with those norms and standards. And then regarding the vehicles, they indicate that there are provinces where the number of vehicles exceeds the number of field workers, and provinces where the number of field workers equal the number of vehicles, and there are other provinces where the number of field workers is less than the number of vehicles. How did they acquire so many vehicles? Because it's resulted, you know, with the department, well, with stats, they say operating with more than double the number of vehicles that they require. How did this happen, and is this not tantamount to wasteful expenditure? And how do they intend to remedy the situation? Is it not better to realize some of these vehicles and, you know, to make up for some of the budget shortfalls you're experiencing? And then National Treasury indicates in their presentation that there was a moratorium placed on the filling of posts from October 2016 as a mitigation strategy and for purposes of ensuring that the personnel costs of staff SA fell within the set compensation ceiling. Yet despite this moratorium, Stats SA incurred unauthorized expenditure of 57 million in the 2017-2018 financial year, another 57 million in the 2018-2019 financial year, and 50 million in the 2019-2020 financial year. I want to find out how this happened, if Stats SA and Treasury could explain why there was this overspending on compensation of employees. And then regarding the funnel model review recommendations, you recommend that Stats SA should outsource its field work as this will be more cost effective. Are you just saying that it should outsource all of its field work or some of its field work? And then what happens to the district offices, as most of these offices are responsible for data collection? Stats SA indicated in the presentation that data collection happens at a district level, and then at a provincial level, that data is then coordinated or collated. And then what happens to the field workers that are permanently employed by Stats SA? And I also want to know whether there's been a cost analysis done to determine whether indeed it will be more cost effective for Stats SA to outsource rather than permanently employ field workers, given that the majority of surveys that it conducts are annual and monthly surveys. Will this not compromise the quality of the data and information that is generated by Stats SA? And will Stats SA not lose control over this information or data? And those are my questions, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gondwe. That will bring us to Honorable Doty. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. And Chair, can I not use my video? Due to my problem. Chair, most of the issues have been covered by the previous speaker, but I wanted to check some of the things, Chairperson. From Stats SA, it appears that over years, Stats SA is going to experience that unauthorized expenditure. With the look of the budget cuts and the work that they are doing, for me, we speak of the expenditure in this regard on compensation of employees, whereas Stats SA is also experiencing has got that vacancy rate as well, meaning the more we fill the post and the more we are going to consume or spend our budget on the compensation of employees. Now, I wanted to check to say,
when they do their planning, are they able to accommodate this process as well? They mentioned the long traveling long distances that led to losing lives. I wanted also to check whether it was caused by the vastness of the municipalities, or it was caused by people traveling between between more than one municipalities. The abolishing of functions, for me, means a weakening of the structure. But can they maybe tell us as to what are the implications of the abolishing of functions? And in terms of the office space, I want to check something, whether there's considered balancing the two of renting and ownership to further reduce expenditure. Have they considered doing that? And maybe what would be the better one to consider in this regard? Now, the overspending, I think the overspending, it's on serious issues. But again, the underspending goes the same way. Now, on this one, I wanted to check from Treasury to say, what is it that can be done in bailing out State SA for them to spend adequately? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Dodi. That will bring us to Honorable Motsepe. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I also like South Africa and also National Treasury. I've got questions for both. If SAFSA may consider the National Treasury advice of outsourcing field workers and data collection, what will happen to the permanent employees responsible for the field work and data? Will this not make the department lose valuable expertise because of outsourcing? The second one is, what are the contributing factors influencing the idea of outsourcing of core business delivery, and what are the risks associated with outsourcing of core business delivery, which is zero tolerance, which we don't condone? And then the last one, can SAFSA justify why most of the employees in the provincial and district offices are employed at the level 12 and 13? Which results the personal expenditure to be high? Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Motsepe. The only dog Honorable Striper, and yes, it's your hand. The rest of, but yeah, then I may make my questions as well. Over to you, Doc.
Thank you, Chair. I'm glad to say I'm not the only doc in the room. I think we attracted some very, very sharp...
Don't start it.
No, Chair. Thank you very much. I'm just also leaving my video off because I'm having some issues as well today. I'd just like to maybe take a bit of a different angle with my questions. I think we risk underplaying perhaps the extent to which the funding crisis at Stats SA actually presents a very clear and present danger to everything that our state says it wants to achieve. I think we need to get a sense from the political leadership as to why the political powers in cabinet and then also the various role players in parliament have actually failed to ensure a better funding dispensation for Stats SA. The officials from the Treasury outlined how this process works, and she made it very clear that there are numerous opportunities for Cabinet and also Parliament to weigh in on this matter and actually overrule and send the technocrats back to the drawing board, I think, as she put it. So why has that not happened? And is this not really a function of skewed political priorities? You know, we live in a context where 10 billion rand can be given to SAA even though it hasn't flown for a year. And at the same time, we are then talking about how Stats SA needs to cut funding even further when it's already at the point of failing to continue publishing these critical statistics upon which every government decision should be based. So I think we must be very upfront and forthright about the political choices that have been made. And to the ministers or deputy ministers on this meeting, I think we need to get a sense of why Cabinet has chosen to prioritize things like SAA over Stats SA, and whether they did so, understanding the implications of not having a functional and world-class statistics agency to actually give the government the information it requires to make informed decisions. And I think the gentleman from the council made the point very clearly that after this COVID crisis hopefully ends one day, if we can get the vaccines, then we're going to face a fundamentally different situation, a much more acute economic and social crisis than we have faced for 27 years. And for us to even start grappling with that, we have to have a stats agency that's able to inform us of what exactly the challenges are, who are the people who have paid the price during these lockdowns, and what are some of the instruments that we can use to get out of this crisis. So I think we must be up front and center about the choices, the priorities that Cabinet and Parliament made in approving budgets which prioritize things like SAA over Stats SA, and we need to get an answer in this committee today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stripe, Honourable Member. That concludes the comments and questions from our side. First to say from my side is that I think I covered it in our opening remarks, that to say that whatever you may say, but what we have found comfort and comprehension on is that the official Stats SA is the basis, the foundation, the roads that informs the country, including all spheres of government, when they formulate or develop their business plan and allocate the budget. And we are saying it is a scientific matter that also we feel very strongly that it cannot be also compared to basic other services as it were. Let me not say basic, other services as it were, but it is a fundamental one of the tools that can inform government where to direct the funds and where the plans in terms of priorities and the other issues, because where we are seated at this committee
focused on life, and let alone that the technical international recognized capacity of Web SA is recognized, but we're just saying close our hope. Even the DP, the NDP also speaks to this. That's why it makes certain pronunciations in terms of what not needs government to do, but also even ourselves with our yearly programs, as it were. It's because in terms of our priorities, it's informed by that. But nevertheless, the collective, starting from the first speaker to respond, is that SA and also the Treasury, as it were, that we would like to hear a very concrete response that says that how can we best, as this community that we are frustrated with, respond and assist each other, both Treasury and also SA, as it were. Thank you very much. Over to you. I think it's the DM, if she wants to say something, or SG, and then we'll come to Treasury, led by Ms. Modise, that will speak. The rest, then they will follow the queue from Ms. Modise and the DM. Thank you very much. Over to you, DM.
Chair, let me just appreciate the engagements from the members of the committee. I just want, so the LSG and the team, they will answer the most specific issues which you have raised. One is that in relation to the suggestions that you are making towards us about the office space, we will go back and I'm sure that the FG and the team will look into it to see how do we effectively take your recommendations and then implement them. Just to clarify one thing, members of the committee, is that I don't think that it is a fair and a linear comparison to compare that SA to SAA, for example. I'm saying this because from time to time as government, we have ensured that we review the budget, we go and look for the resources so that we can assist the institution to remain afloat. And let's not say that we as government, we are not prioritizing the SAA. I don't think it's an honest and a fair comparison of the two. From time to time, if you remember in my opening remarks, for example, I did indicate that after engagement with the legislature and the SG and the State Council, which happened in the 2020-2021 financial year, we were able to go and advocate, and State SA did receive the 45 million, and then that assisted in increasing its own budget. We remain committed to ensuring that the institution is independent, it has got the resources so that it can continue to do its work. I'm also taking note, which we'll take back, and I'll have a conversation with the acting minister, what the chairperson of the council said in relation to us allowing them to be able to do their work and supporting them in that regard, and we take it like that. I'm going to request that the SG can then go into the specific questions which have been asked. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. SG, over to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you indeed, Chairperson. I will just give a high-level response to some of the questions, but I will hand over to Mr. Bruce Uoste, who is our acting DDG for corporate services, to talk on most of the corporate services issues, as well as to Celia Dietlek, who will talk about our fieldwork model that is derived from the continuous population survey that we have put in place. But let me start off by what Honorable Gondwe raised, that why are we continue to overspend when we are not filling vacancies and our vacancy rate is high? It is because the allocations for compensation of employees and I'm talking about warm bodies, already people that have been hired for the last 20, 30 years instead of, say, or for the last 10 years, is because the money we get is not enough to pay salaries of staff members that are already in the organization. So the reality is that we have staff members, but we don't have money to pay their salaries. And that's why we overspend on compensation of employees. That is the first thing. The second issue is that if CSA would start mass demobilization of staff members for those that we can't afford because we haven't been given enough money, that would cause instability in the public service. We do not think it is the responsibility of CSA to start issues of retrenchment outside a properly coordinated facility within the public service to deal with that. So of now, we have staff members who have been with CSA for the last 10 years, for the last 20 years, for the last 30 years. Come 1st of April, we do not have enough money to pay their salaries. So when we kick into the new financial year, we will already be on over expenditure based on the current numbers that we have. That is the challenge. And this is a historic issue. In the year of 2015, there were three departments that actually were cut on compensation of employees, largely on warm bodies that they already had. And those are set to say Department of Health and Department of Defense. I do not know how they have fed. The other two departments have fed over the course of years. But one thing I can say is that for CSA, it has had massive ramifications, because when for the last 4 years we could not appoint or promote, when staff members have no hope, they leave, and the best ones have left. We still have among the best of the best, but they will leave if there's no hope in any organization, especially in an organization where you compete on the basis of your technical knowledge. Let me mention that CSA is amongst the top five agencies in the world that are sought after for opinion on every issue, including methods of collection for prices, population studies, GDP, environment, even new areas of measurement of ICT and environment. We are sought after because of the rigor that we have built in our methods. And in this regard, it's not only the statistician general who sits in these meetings. We have city groups set up by the UN, by the African Union, by the IMF, and the World Bank. When it comes to matters statistics, including the African Development Bank, CSA, the world over, is among the top five agencies that they seek to hear our voice before they move. That then explains that the responsibility of the statistician general and that of CSA employees is to defend our methods. Now, Honorable Mutsipe raised an issue that what if we would outsource our functions? What it would mean is that we would have to close down CSA. I would not sit here, Chairperson and Honorable Members, if we were to outsource our brains in the work of technical knowledge. Because then, one, when those issues that are raised on the quality of our data, which have occurred from time to time, the quality of data of CSA and the methods have been raised, then we've been able to explain and defend them. The role of the statistician general or a statistician in official practice is to explain their methods and defend their practices on a public good called official statistics. So when we sit here and we outsource and people bring us the report, we will not be able to defend the methods because they are decided by other people. We will not be able to take ownership. Council cannot advise an outsourced agency. They must advise the statistician general because this is a national statistics function. We have tried to approach donor agencies for funding. But donor agencies, their programs are not on what we want to measure. The donor agencies, when they come, they already have an idea of what they want to measure. One of the things that they are interested in and the time use survey, which is used in Europe to see how people are spending their time. And if you ask me, if we have to choose between measurements on this, on matters of poverty, inequality, and employment in South Africa versus time use or how people spend their time when they are on holiday, we would rather measure issues that will help us shape our policies. Honorable TV raised an issue of what happened when we lost a lot of field workers, especially to accidents in the fatalities that we faced. It's because our staff members, especially in the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and Northern Cape, they were driving long distances. What is happening is that when we deal with samples, we must make sure that every settlement, every business entity, especially in household survey, informal settlements, suburbs, townships, rural areas, farms, and every household must be represented. If we are saying 20% of South Africans are experiencing this, if we are saying in rural areas or the number of those in informal settlements, households are increasing, we must have an authoritative approach on how we have dealt with our sampling methods. And if we must report at sub-national level, the samples must be designed in such a way that they report. Now, in this regard, if you look at the Northern Cape, it's one of the areas where we say the population is sparse. We would like to actually have lesser number of district offices. But if you have lesser number of district offices, we must be prepared to spend more on transport, because then you must have someone moving from Kimberley traveling 1,200 kilometers to or further to go and collect one questionnaire, that which is sampled. And once it's sampled, we cannot replace because it's because of distance. We might be losing out on that data attribute that is representative of a situation that we must report on in South Africa. So if someone must, either we must spend on transport and hotel accommodation. But what happened, particularly in the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape, is that our staff members were traveling sometimes a single trip, or let me say a return of about 350 to 700 kilometers in a day. And people were tired. A driver, because not all our field workers are drivers, so usually a driver, based on the survey that we are conducting, will be carrying about 3 to 4 occupants in the passengers. So in this regard, if a driver, and the other field workers do not have to be drivers necessarily, only a driver who happens to be the supervisor, because once he drives, he goes around, he or she goes around in the morning and drop them at a sampled enumeration area so that they can reach a dwelling unit. So you could have one sampled dwelling unit in Pretoria, and one is in Johannesburg, one is in Verbeernaheg, and one is in the West Rand. So what happens is that in the morning, they travel together, they meet at a central point, they actually get dropped at different areas, which in Gauteng is easier because the distances are small. The supervisor must be ready to troubleshoot should there be problems, or where the respondents are not cooperating, must be able to reach out and support the field workers. By the time the end of the day, the field work, the driver is tired. They've been doing work, they are driving, and when they are tired and they have to take a 400 kilometer stretch, and they left at 3:30 in the morning, and they must go back at 7 o'clock, and there are cattle on the road, there's all sorts of things and fatigue. We have lost lives, and it's a serious issue. We cannot gamble with people's lives, because then we have an unmotivated field work. So if you ask me, I'll leave the rest to Bruce and Celia. But before that, I wonder if Chair of Council would like to say something before I hand over to the rest of the colleagues at Status Say. Professor Everett.
Thank you, SG. Chair, if you'll allow me. There's your video proof that I exist, I think. Not a pretty sight, I'll switch it off. I think the SG has said it very, very well, in that it would be inconceivable for Status A to outsource field. to do three callbacks at every dwelling. All of those things, they all cost. So looking at cost of employees is ignoring the point I made at the beginning, which is the statistical value that you get from the patience it takes to do that field work rather than, and you've seen this during elections and elsewhere, people doing quick, for example, online surveys or cell phone surveys, and the results are often completely wrong because they didn't go and knock on doors and talk to people, and you don't know who's answered the phone, and you don't know whether they are giving you accurate answers or not because you can't actually look and see what kind of dwelling it's in. But I think there's a fundamental mismatch between, and I fully accept that we may be, I'm not the SG, I don't work for StatsSA, so I'm sure if they can make savings along the lines that Treasury has indicated, I'm absolutely sure we will because it's in our interest. But I think there's a very big difference between a 42 million rand possible saving if we limit office space in provinces to the hundreds of millions of rand that we're talking about that the institution needs and that have been cut since 2015. And I think our colleagues at Treasury can't really, in all honesty, start with COVID and say, well, we have to make choices. The question would be, what choice was made in 2015-16, in 2016-17, 2017-18, 2018-19, that created the situation that when COVID came, StatsSA was already on its knees? And that, I think, is the problem we face, is that right now we fully understand, and that's why council is still in its place, that government is facing appalling choices, appallingly difficult choices about what to do with its money. But that said, government has also consistently cut the budget to StatsSA. And I don't have no party politics. I don't care who's in power. I'm just saying the budget was cut, the samples were cut, the statistics became less valuable because they cut off at a higher level, and they're not going to serve what you need, which is local level granular data that newly elected councillors in this election, assuming it happens in August, they're going to say, give me the data. I don't know what this place looks like that I have to now be in charge of. And we'll say, sorry, we just don't have the data because we just don't. And I think, 42 million is lovely if we can say that, and we will. But Treasury really need to be talking in the area of hundreds of millions of rand, not for the census, but to maintain a sustainable StatsSA that, as all of the speakers have said, gives us the confidence in our data that if a global corporation comes along and says, I want to invest, we can immediately show them exactly the best places, the best workforce, who's got the right skills, who's got the most need, etc., etc. If you don't take that on board, then I'm afraid what you're doing is you're saying to StatsSA, survive on less and less in an already imperiled situation that was created by cutting your budget from 2015 onwards, and we'll wing it. And I'm afraid at that point StatsSA ceases to have any real value, and that would just be an unmitigated tragedy given the skill with which this entity has operated in the past and in the present. So I'm really hoping we can have a conversation that is not about, we concede cost cutting, saving. If we can, we'll do it. But the conversation has to be of an order of magnitude beyond how to trim costs on cars and cost of employees.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me allow Bruce and followed by Celia Chairperson in that quick order.
And then we summarize SG.
Thanks. Bruce, don't keep it long this time. Keep it short.
Thank you, Chairperson and SG and colleagues. I think both SG and David have summarized it. Just to give you background to the Treasury report on the provincial offices and what has come out. In September last year, we gave all information that's reflected basically as the annexures in the report. We provided that evidence to National Treasury. And then they were then assessing the information and coming up with a report, which was issued to StatsSA on the 5th of February this year. We did not have time to engage with National Treasury because of the operational requirements that we were dealing with census matters. But the qualification in the Treasury report, I think, was suffice to highlight that the details, and the devil is always in the details of reports, that was not yet clarified and cleared out with StatsSA. So we have identified anomalies in the report. For example, the office space in the Northern Cape is out by 400 square meters. But just to give guidelines as to what's happening, we do use DPW's guidelines. That's a fact. We also do not procure office rental without giving DPW the actual requirements in detail. So when we look for office space, we highlight in detail what we require. So we do a needs analysis, and that is what gets forwarded to DPW, and DPW does the sourcing of the office accommodation. That's another challenge in terms of the issues we have with DPW, because we do have offices that do not even comply with health and safety regulations, but that's another discussion, and we are in engagements with DPW regarding that. But office accommodation is based on the headcount at a particular point in time. So when you say there are no management or different levels of organization of staff and higher levels, that's based on the natural attrition that we've had to allow, and the fact that we could not recruit more staff to be populating those offices over the past 5 years. So when you look at office space, we sign lease agreements and they go from 3 to 5 years, and that's based on the existing headcount, approved establishment count at that point in time. And that is what has happened. So obviously the attrition and the reduction in our headcount, approved headcount, that will inform the new lease agreements. For example, our George office, we're looking for accommodation now that expires at the end of December. We are cutting almost 300 square meters out of an 800 square meter current lease agreement. So that is what we are definitely looking at, members, in terms of reducing office space. Similarly, vehicles. The assessment was done in September. With the advent of COVID, we actually ceased survey operations countrywide, and that impacted on us returning actually over 400 vehicles to the service provider. So we only had the administrative vehicles, the core vehicles of about 165 countrywide. That was, and you'll notice that coming through in the savings on motor vehicle expenses in the current financial year. Celia will talk to how we are moving from paper to CAPI and how that impacts, but you must remember the dynamics of our society dictates that CAPI, the process of using CAPI interviews is still the dominant way of doing data collection, and that informs a field worker visiting a respondent, no matter where that respondent is in the country, in rural villages or wherever, we need to gain that access. COVID, the recommendations, and these are the issues when you're recommending the number of occupants per vehicle in terms of COVID now, that has impacted. You can only have 3 people in a vehicle now, including the driver. And these are all the discussions that we needed. We still need to engage National Treasury on, and then also to highlight the assumptions they've made in the report that needs to be reviewed, and then we can take it from there. Obviously, we are aware with the worthy savings of office accommodation and vehicles comes with a corresponding increase in technology costs. We have to increase our data usage and all the other related expenses. But just to say, committee members, we are cognizant of the fact to actually save costs and reduce the goods and services budget, but that will then be overtaken by increased costs in technology and other costs. With the tools of trade, as we've spoken to, that is something that every public servant, whether working from home or not, needs to be accessible by Stats SA. So I will not then go into the detail. We only constructed the head office building as part of a triple P, but all the accommodation countrywide is in the hands of DPW and they're the provider of office space, whether they give us a government building, government owned building, or private rental that's up to DPW. We do not choose the service providers. Chairperson, I think we will then be able to actually give Parliament an updated report. Treasury Parliament was reviewing the Treasury report, and our response will then obviously and the combined response will then be submitted in the near future. I've covered most of the big ticket items. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the responses, but also I think this purpose of today's meeting is not to make anyone sit on the carpet and try to be defensive, that's one, but to say from the portfolio committee space, we're saying that we strongly believe that the actual mandate of SET SA informs the planning, the budget allocation of all spheres of government, let alone that even the private sector also use that as a information as it were. So that's an only thing, and we are saying at the portfolio committee that can we, all of us who've got powers mandated by the constitution, to say technically and otherwise, we cannot allow that SA to be compromised in terms of their output, scientific, professional output that is recognized throughout the world, but also informing our plans as the government in its totality and also allocation of budget. Because where we are sitting is that numbers don't lie, because nobody can also be challenging those ones. And we want to say that we still believe that SA is doing the well, the good work. With all the responses, honorable members, shall we say that we have had all the presenters? We are strongly suggesting that they must go home and put their minds together so that we don't compromise SA, its core mandate, and the reason why they exist. And we're not going to also to liquidate SA for whatever good reason, that's one. Two, as the portfolio committee, we are, maybe we need to also to have an engagement with the both portfolio committees based on the slide 5, that Ms. Modisa spoke to, and see how best can we convince each other as members of Parliament first, so that it's not even convincing ourselves to say, if we don't then appropriate funding to this institution, these are the dangers, that whatever may come out would not have a legitimate blessing, so to speak. So that's the only thing that we're saying. And we're saying that we're not competing with other service delivery departments and the bettering the lives of our people as it were. But nevertheless, whatever we do in bettering the lives of our people must also take note of the statistical data that we get. Would also be in simplified for us to say, where do we allocate the budget, where do we also equally prioritize as a country as it were. With that, honorable members, if we close it that way, that one, we'll have an engagement with the appropriation committee, bilaterals as it were. Not because we like it, because it's one of the foundation and the basis that informs government how they do their work as it were and prioritize their budget allocation as it were. That we'll approach them through the chairperson's office, not the whole committee, and then we'll report back in the due course in that engagement as it were. with that, honorable members, I hope I've summarized and also expressed your way forward, as it were. Who'd like to comment on my summary, as it were? Honorable members, I'll see by short hand on the platform. If there's no hand, I'll take it that that's the way forward. That then gave us to say, let's thank both SA and the Treasury Department for their presentation, and we note the areas that SA must also as a moving target to look at. The DM is here, and we will, from the chairperson's office, engage both the chairperson of the board committees, so that we can get clarity, and when we come back from recess, then politically, as the ones that we are mandated to reduce or put more money or vote otherwise in terms of slide 5 that Ms. Modise has spoken to, and we will then direct the officials accordingly. With that, honorable members, would I, can I get a confirmer in terms of what my summary, please? It cannot be silence as golden.
Honorable
Kibi, I can see your mic is on offer. You
yes.
May member, honorable
yes.
Member.
Please. Yes, honorable chair, I think you have summarized it very well. And Mina, I think we really agree with your summary. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And if there's no other hand, I'll take it all of us to an agreement that we are grossly concerned in terms of underfunding of SA, and moving forward, we'll do what I said without repeating myself with that. Thank you very much, Treasury. Representatives and also SA and DM for your attendance, and also demonstrating with evidence the need of us is also to pay attention to the importance of SA as it were. Thank you very much, and we'll move then, honorable members, to the next item that will bring us to item number 5. Which is the consideration of the annual report for the portfolio committee. Here, honorable members, is that it is inverted commas, a legacy report, so to speak. We are expected, directed by the chairs of chairs, that at any given financial year, we must produce a yearly report that will indicate what we have done. Secondly, what responses in what we have done, and also moving forward, what we intend to do. So I would suggest that if you may agree with me that we note that report for the members, whether they want to take it through their caucuses or anything, then we will take it as a working document for now, and we allow the administration through Mr. McCauley to submit it to the chairs of chairs for as a working document, as it were. Let me see a show of hands in terms of item number 5, honorable members, that this is 2020 report, annual report, because if you recall in terms of our engagement with Auditor General also, before he deals with the department that accounts in our portfolio committee, but also he or she talks, now with him, she would also make reference to the portfolio committee in terms of what is mandated constitutionally and in its terms of reference as it were. So this is a report that has been submitted to us. I'll see by show of hands, honorable members.
Chairperson, may I request something? This is...
before that, it's a part of before. Okay.
Yeah, just a quick one. Let me
usually invite us for a meeting, that you thank us as the man you have released us. In our regular meetings, we had to sit with you until you have formally closed the meeting. And for me, as statistician general who sometimes visits the Sangoma in the village, the Sangoma tells you to leave. You don't say, I'm leaving, goodbye. The Muti won't work. So I see status staff members are still online. Would you release us so that you deal with your formal process? Thanking us was not enough to release us. We have to abide by your rules, Chair.
Okay, thank you, SG. No, safe to say that you are at liberty to leave, but also I must qualify why I know that you are part of the whatever we discuss indirectly or directly impact from you. Nevertheless, you are requesting permission, and that permission, I hope the honorable members will agree with me. Permission granted. Thank you very much, both Treasury and also StatsSA and the chairperson, Mr. Everard. Thank you very much, sir, for also availing yourself. We are looking forward also engaging with your good self on other related matters that pertaining to StatsSA core mandate, as it were. We understand that you don't report directly to us, also an independent body. Time to time, there is something that also connects us. Like you owe us the legislative reform that I'm sure SG will also appraise you on that one. With that, as you deem necessary, you can excuse yourself. But having said that, I will also ask members to respond what I've just made in terms of the summer text of what has transpired with the fourth and the fifth item, as it were, in terms of the agenda. Thank you very much. Okay, let's see the hands. I've got the Honorable Clark. Your hand is up, ma'am. There's no hand. May I assume that we are agreeing in terms of the closing remarks by my good sir, and we quickly go to item number five. Item number five, honorable members, which I've already spoken to, that is an annual report for 2020, which we are expected to produce. You will remember that even when she addresses us, will say that the first point will say what is expected from the committee, and then she will make his own findings and observations, as it were. And also the chair of chairs has also requested us that we don't also produce the legacy report, as it were, at the end of the term of the current administration, but every year we produce the annual report, which is a yardstick that would call what we have achieved, what we have promised ourselves, what is outstanding. So it's more of a dashboard for our performance as the portfolio committee. So I would suggest that all members go through it. When you come back from the recess, we'll review it. If there's anything that we think that is not a true reflection of what we thought we have achieved and what we thought we haven't achieved and what would be carried forward for 2021, as it were. Let me have any other members that will agree what I've just said. I'll see by show of hands on the dashboard. Okay. There are no hands, which means all of us, we agree, honorable members. That will bring us then to request Mastole to beam the outstanding adoption of the minutes of our previous engagement, as it were. Mastole, over to you. Then you beam them accordingly. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Profiling transformation. I don't know if it was on transformation, and then the findings of the report. The name of the report is not Advocate.
By Toby.
Yeah, there is a name for it. I think it's a in terms of a section of the medical or something like that. But if you could be, you know, because that report is not that. I just wanted to. Correct that factual.
Okay. If you may do that, Mr. Mascole, based on the agenda item as it were.
And then, Chairperson, it's very important that that point is made. It's not the final report, it's an interim report.
Oh yes, I remember, because also we please say that. Let's get the heading of the report. Flagged on the report.
Okay, I will make the amendments.
Okay, can you continue then?
I was already on the last page, Chair.
Why do you go to the last page? What it means with the Honorable Gondwe, you go to the first page, which is the covering page, then the second one, and slowly, and then you continue here. Because also the attributes and the appointments are very critical.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Go then. Thank you.
That's the department attendance list.
Okay, thank you.
That's page 6.
Okay.
I noticed under the attendance, he's called the Council for Medical Scheme. It's medical scheme with an S.
Oh,
this is English. Okay, Marcy, you're correct. Open up to English.
Can Honorable Member just repeat that?
I was saying that you, it's Council for Medical, not Medical Scheme.
It's one, it's not many.
Okay, so you have to put an S after every.
That will be.
I'll say by show of hand or somebody shout to want to intervene.
That's page 4, Chair. That is the last page.
Chair? Yes, Ms. Honorable Gordon.
We may have been premature to call this meeting.
Which is this meeting?
The meeting concerned. Given that we were dealing with a preliminary report, I don't know if that point came through. Marcy, if you can go up a bit. And then there was an indication given that once the final report comes out, then we would have to engage on the final report. I stand to be corrected, but I remember that's how we proceeded in that meeting.
Okay. Honorable members, if we are friends, that means that we agree with Honorable Bondwe. Let me just, Marcy, if you can go to the purpose of the meeting. Yes, I'm reading it now. Oh, that was a joint committee meeting, ne?
Yes.
No. I think Honorable Godoy would be quite right without also going give it explanation. Let's leave with that what she says.
Okay, Chair. So
remember that it was said by only the health chairperson who was not even ready to chair the meeting because we requested the meeting, we joined the portfolio committee meeting. So I think she's right.
Okay, sir. We will set 2 points, 2.14 and 2.15.
But also do add, Marcy, that our committee must ensure that when they invite other portfolio committees in the form of joint committees or inviting other committee, other departments that report to other committees must also be able to co-chair the meeting as it were. Because I think that's what Honorable Gonde is trying to register here.
Noted, Chair.
Because that's a fact that ourselves were not there to co-chair the meeting.
Noted, Chair. Those amendments will be made according to Chair.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's go to the last page then, Marcy.
This was the last page number 5, Chair.
With those amendments, Honorable Members, let's get the mover and the seconder and the reserve his or her rights on the minutes. Okay, we're not going to waste time because this one is something else. Let me just close it. Marcy, by the look of things, because we must keep the records, there's no hand. So this minute stands deferred until the next meeting because there's nobody who wants to adopt with the amendments that have been made because we can't wait for more than 5 minutes. That's my view. Let's go to the second set of minutes.
No, the Chair, these are the minutes of the 24th of February, Chair. That was the following day after we had the joint meeting, Chair.
Okay, our ordinary portfolio committee, ne?
Yes, Chair. That day, okay. The Chair was not there. Here
okay,
also,
cool.
The here, Chair, we were just also adopting the first and second quarter reports and the minutes. So I'll move on stage one.
I think it sounds like Congress Mosike.
Honorable Suma?
Oh, Congress Gobe, over to you, ma'am.
Yes. Might you just go to the first page? You indicate that it was a virtual meeting via Microsoft Teams. We are on Zoom, so just correct that.
Oh,
not my
That's just fine, Honorable Gwadu, because the challenges that we experience are not the same in terms of the platforms that we use.
Yes, thank you so much.
Mm. Okay, continue, Honorable Mr. Martin.
I'm on page one, Chair. Moving to page
two. Don't forget, Honorable Members, that the approaches are very critical, and also that you did we correct as well. Continue, Marcy, until I see a hand or a voice.
Page three, Chair. Adopted minutes as well on the day, Chair. That is the last page, Chair.
May I get the mover and the second of the this 6 minutes, please, Honorable Members?
Honorable Chair.
Honorable Kibi, thank you very much, ma'am. Over to you.
I move for the adoption of the minutes as presented. I thank you, Chair.
Okay, any second, Honorable Members?
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Maluleke, I second.
Thank you, ma'am. Let's go to the next set of minutes, Mr. Masi.
Thank you, President. These are the minutes of the 3rd of March. I'm on page 1.
Just continue. I'll see by a show of hand of somebody shouting to say, let's wait and up. Attend to this. Continue, Marcy. I'll see by show of hands or somebody shouting the voice.
That's the last page.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Members, and thank you, Marcy. May we get a mover and a seconder or any comments, Honorable Members? It cannot be signed as golden. Honorable Mandut,
I move.
Yes, ma'am.
I move. Change of position.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Any seconder, Honorable Members?
Honorable Chair, Mozipa?
Yes, ma'am.
I second.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Let's go to, is there any other outstanding minutes, Mozipa?
That's all, Chair. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. But don't forget, Honorable Members, the first set of minutes, there was no seconder and a mover. So that one is going to be outstanding until the next meeting. That's one. But having said that, Honorable Members, is that we're almost done with our business of the day.
Chair.
On item number, Honorable Duli, before.
Chair, I wanted to check something. Mm-hmm. Honorable Gondwe, effected correction.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning those that set of minutes had been corrected now.
Okay, but there must be a mover and a seconder. She didn't. She just left it that way.
Can we go back to it because we haven't closed the meeting to adopt with it with amendments?
Okay, Mr. Mascola, can you go to the very first minutes that Honorable Gondwe have inputted on?
so that we can also dispose with those minutes as per Honorable Dooley's suggestion.
Not at Chair.
Just flight it for the benefit of the collective.
Yes, I'm just going to them.
Okay, thank you.
These are the minutes of the 23rd of February.
Beam them, beam them, beam them. There you are. Okay. Honorable Tony?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Over to you now. Because we've got the minutes now, formal and legally, so it's beamed.
Yes, ma'am. I would love to adopt the minutes with amendment.
Okay, we'll move for adoption. Any second, honorable members? Out here by the voice, Honorable Tuli moves. I see Honorable Motipe have mic is on. Honorable Motipe?
I would also like to adopt the minutes of the
premier. Thank you. The minutes are adopted accordingly, honorable members. Thank you very much. May we then quickly then, before we adjourn our meeting, to go to the announcement, which is between the adoption of the minutes and also the adjournment. That one, from the chairperson's office, would like to report that the special PC committee meeting will be held during the recess time. What we'll be dealing with here, Martin, if you can refresh me, is you recall that members last week we raised a couple of issues. One was the base office referred bill to us. Two was also the incoming quarter program. And there's a third point, Masi, that I'll ask you if you may.
Okay, sir.
Yes, because also we have already agreed and accepted the incremental 2020 annual performance plan for the COVID, which the AG also doesn't only assess the department, also assess the portfolio committees in terms of the constitutional mandate, as it were. There's a third point that I've just omitted here on my notes. If you can add that one to say, we will be meeting one of the good days before during the recess. One is the receiving the output, the legal advice from the legal parliamentary legal office to say what has been referred to us from the bills office. Does it fall under us or it falls under the Finance Portfolio Committee? Two also is our most part of our quarterly report as a working document that the AG also doesn't only access the performance of the department, also even of the portfolio committees in terms of their constitutional and in terms of the rules of the committee mandate, whether we're doing what we're expected to do as a portfolio committee. Those are the two things I think, Marcy, you remind me to say this is a third point that I'm omitting here. If you may, then the members can respond to that. Over to you, Marcy.
Yes, thank you, sir. I know I think you've highlighted what we need to inform members on, particularly on the request by the Minister, Honorable Mthunu, who requested the Portfolio Committee to have a special meeting next week on the wage negotiations. As we are aware that there's a process of the negotiations that is in place, and we are advised that the Minister and the delegation from the unions are meeting between the 20th and the 21st. So now the minister really requests that he meets the committee
to brief the committee on the processes that is actually taking place. And as you are aware, that our next meeting will be somewhere in May, and at that time, the committees, and that particularly committees in general, will have to be focusing their attention on budget voting. So the minister wanted to actually be the first person that tells us as the committee, cannot remember, on the process. And secondly, the other item that you mentioned, Chair, is the issue of saying this is one of our last meetings. We're in the process of analyzing programs, the second term program. That program will be made available to members. It's a 5-week program starting from first week of May up until the first week of June, Chair. That is all, Chair. I thank you so much, sir.
Honourable members, you recall on the last point of Mr. Masu that we did urge members of this portfolio committee to indicate any other item that they think that must be part of the quarterly quarterly program, as it were, so that there's no one that would feel that his or her own issue that thinks that the committee must look at has not been in a platform to address those issues. So in due course, hopefully before the end of Friday, incoming Friday business of the day, we would have received the draft program of the incoming quarter for the portfolio committee. And I will humbly request the members to react on it and also be mindful that in terms of our and resolution system, you visit that mark, Mascola, if you can circulate that one, the latest one, which is updated one, so that the members can look at that one and also then can contribute on our incoming quarter program, as it were. But safe to say that before the coming back from recess, there will be a special meeting to afford the minister to take the portfolio committee in confidence in terms of the last leg of the previous wage negotiations, as it were, but also with the anticipation of the wage negotiations, how it's going to look at like. I think with that, on the members, that's where then in terms of item between 5 and 6, stands today, but also we don't close the gate or the door for any other member through Mascola that can also email to say, I think as a member, the portfolio committee must look at this. It will be accommodated in the program, as it were, honorable members. Let me see the any other hands probably before I close the meeting. For now, honorable members, by looking at me, it's only my mic that is on. Let's agree and also wish all of us collectively a very good and also Ushabalum Shabati be planted in Suzuru.
Ushabalum Shabati.
The program, and wish all our good self a healthy recess. And I know recess is the relative, but all of us went on our special meeting during the recess to allow or afford a platform for the Minister Mthunu for DPSA to take us in confidence before he also addresses the nation. Other than that, have a blessed week and the recess, honorable members. God bless us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, all members.
Thank you, Chairperson.